Hello to all of you boys next door, mums and dads, new weds and nearly deads, and welcome to Dangerous Amusements, a podcast where we talk about the music of Elvis Costello. I'm Stu Arrowsmith, and on each episode I'm joined by a special guest to chat all things Elvis, and I ask them to help me compile the ultimate Elvis Costello playlist. Don't make any sudden movements, because these are Dangerous Amusements. I'm delighted to be joined on this episode by a BBC broadcaster, a radio and TV presenter, whose list of illustrious interviewees includes, of course, Elvis Costello. Welcome to Dangerous Amusements, Becky Want.
Thank you very much for having me. Nice to see you, Stu.
Yeah, and to you. And it's you who's having me, because we're here in your studio at the BBC. Thank you for accommodating us. I mean, not least because you're broadcasting to the nation in a couple of hours' time.
So. I am, yeah. 3 hours, 2 hours 50 and counting. I will be doing my show, but this is an absolute pleasure. And you asked me a good few weeks ago, and since then I have been revisiting Elvis Costello. I've listened back to the interviews that I've done with him, which I have to say I rarely do that. But I've been hearing him again. I've been hearing how nervous I was at the first time I interviewed him, and I'll tell you that story in a little while. But I've been going back to the songs as well, and it's just been an absolute pleasure for me and my husband. We are both fans of Elvis Costello.
Yeah, and you said this has been a bit of a family affair, listening back to the records and making the choices.
Yeah, we've done it together.
Good.
So it's me and my husband. So the first song, for obvious reasons, I suppose, we agonised over it a little bit, but then we went radio. Yeah. It's a cheesy choice, I know, but I thought that was fitting. And actually, if I kind of start at the end of the Elvis Costello story, we went to see him in March, days before lockdown happened, and it was touch and go. He was at the Palace Theatre in Manchester, and it was touch and go whether that would go ahead, and we really didn't know right up to the night. And we went to see him. It was a most magnificent night. And I remember distinctly him doing radio. That was kind of standout for us that night. And then literally it felt like hours later we were locked down. And so for almost 2 years, my musical memory was Elvis Costello at the Palace Theatre. And it was a fantastic concert. That's the end of the story, I suppose, or that's the story, the end so far. But the beginning of the story actually starts when I was at Bristol University. So I went there to study drama, and I got friendly with a small group of people, lads, all lads. And there's me, a very, very green convent girl from Stockport who didn't really know where Bristol was. How I managed to get into the university, I don't really know, but I did. And we were palling around together. One of that small group happens to be my husband now. Now, we knew each other then. Then we went our separate ways, and then just a few years ago, we got back together. However, we were friends for those 3 years. I was going out with another friend in this little group, and we were into Elvis Costello, we were into Ian Drury, we were into The Jam, Joe Jackson. And I was always one of the lads, always. I was palling around with them. I quite fancied myself as Chrissy Hynde from The Pretenders, kind of, you know, that kind of vibe. That was what I was projecting, or trying to project, or Debbie Harry. But you know,
the Chrissy Hynde of Bristol.
Well, I wish, but yeah, that was the vibe. And it was strange, really, because the women around, the female students, tended to be into sort of cheesy pop and like ABBA and a bit of Barry Manilow and stuff like that. And that wasn't my thing. So I was out with the lads the whole time. Anyway, Elvis did this gig. So this is the first time I saw him. He did this gig at Colston Hall in Bristol. I think it was 1981. And it was, you know, obviously all the hits. So it was Pump It Up, and it was Chelsea, and it was Red Shoes, and it was Oliver's Army, and it was Radio. And it was just a most fantastic night. And I remember it distinctly, and I have actually paraphrased this. So my boyfriend at the time, Kerry, was writing a review for the Bristol magazine, which was called Nonsuch, which, of course, we thought was a very clever magazine title. And he wrote words to the effect of this, and I've always remembered it because as a 19, 20-year-old, however old I was, I thought this was incredibly clever, and isn't my boyfriend really clever? And it was words to the effect of, going to an Elvis Costello concert is like opening a box with all 40 of your favourite chocolates in it. You don't know what you're going to get. You know you're going to love every one, but you'll miss the ones that you haven't eaten.
Oh, very good.
And I'm like, oh my goodness me, he is the man for me. That's just so brilliant. Bless him. Yes, I remembered it all these years later, but that was amazing. That was an amazing, amazing night, amazing concert and amazing times with all these lads and all that wonderful music. So radio.
And there we go. That's the first of the songs that you've chosen for the playlist. The playlist for this season is called Powder and Perfume. And your task, which you've said was hopefully a pleasurable one, was to pick six of your favourite Elvis songs, one from each decade. And that one, as you nicely introed for us, that was from the 1970s Radio. Yeah, one of those definitive early Costello hits. It was originally titled Radio Soul when Elvis performed it with Flip City, and then turned into Radio and released as a single in 1978. It was named Single of the Week in Sounds and reached number 29 in the charts. And a more appropriate song choice we couldn't have had for your first one, I don't think.
It's strange, actually, isn't it? Because it's about his hatred of radio, which is typical Elvis. There we go.
In the second iteration, but that first one, Radio Soul, is a really warm, affectionate look back. And I was thinking, because his dad, obviously, with those performances, they would have been on the radio. And there's quite a romance about that, having live performances in a radio studio, I think, that must have carried with him. And maybe that's part of what Radio Soul was all feeding into.
Yes, I think he loved radio. Mm. He talked to me about that. He talked to me about his father singing, you know, and practicing these songs to sing with the Joe Loss Orchestra for the radio. But then he got disillusioned and, you know, he hated the censorship. And I think it was to do with the Sex Pistols and God Save the Queen and all that being banned. What did he say? I found a quote, actually, from him. He said, "Radio is absolutely the enemy of the people. They are my sworn and mortal enemy and I will have nothing to do with them." And I wish I'd had that when I interviewed him on the radio. He's the king of the understatement, isn't he? Not.
Yeah, absolutely. I was thinking, I may have said this before, I think a radio show is probably the one thing that he's not done. Because obviously he's done his TV show, Spectacle. He writes so prolifically for, you know, various magazines when the opportunities come up. You could imagine with that encyclopedic knowledge of music and the passion he has for it, you know, some kind of specialist show, like when Bob Dylan did Theme Time, Radio Hour, some really niche little piece that we would all love, you know.
I bet BBC Six Music would love that, wouldn't they? Yeah. That's right up there, Ali.
Yeah. We'll knock on in a minute when we're finished.
They're only over there.
Yeah. Well, tell me a little bit about the appearances on your radio show. You've mentioned it's been on more than once. What about that first occasion? How did it come about? And what was it like for a massive Elvis Costello fan to interview Elvis Costello on your show?
So this is the story. I was working and had worked for many years on BBC Radio Manchester, and now work for the network, the BBC local network, but for many years. The studio we're in now is my studio where I broadcast now and have broadcast for years. And I was doing the lunchtime show between midday and three. But just along the corridor on this floor in our building in Media City is the studio for BBC Breakfast Television. So if I came in early enough, which I did every day, if I was here at 8 o'clock in the morning, my show's not till midday, any manner of huge stars would walk literally past my desk. And I would interview many of them when they'd done their TV interview. So I had my, the colour of my guest was amazing. Now, most of the time, I'm not just saying that, you know, I'm kind of going, oh, you're all right, come in my studio. Most of the time, you'd phone the press people. My producer would phone the press people and say, you know, when they've done BBC Breakfast, can they come and do the local radio station? And, you know, I don't know, 7 times out of 10, let's say, maybe 8 times out of 10, it was a yes, because they're literally here on the same floor. So with Elvis Costello, we heard that, you know, he was coming in to do this BBC Breakfast interview, and I said to my producer Helen, I'm like, please just like do whatever you can, you know, this is my big chance, you know, I've loved him forever. And so she's like, right, anyway, so she contacted the press, the PR, whoever that was, and it was a flat no. It was an absolutely no way, not a chance, no. Don't even think about it. Yeah.
Have you not read my quote about radio being my mortal enemy?
Yes, exactly. like crestfallen, okay. Well, it doesn't matter. I'm still going to come in at 8 o'clock in the morning, sit exactly where I do. I know he's got to walk, he'll have been in make if he's got to walk past my desk. So I was here. And he walked past, and I said, and I thought, well, now's my moment. I just say hello, you know, silly not to. So I stood up and I said, oh, you know, Elvis, I just want to say, I'm such a fan of yours. I'm so fangirl about it. I'm such a fan of yours. And he shook my hand and he said to me, what do you do? I said, oh, I present the lunchtime show on the local radio station. That's my studio. You can see it from here. And he had his people around him. And I said, I'd have loved to have interviewed you, but I know you've not got enough time after the television interview. And he said, of course I've got time. What are you talking? And he turned to his press people who were giving me daggers by this time. And he said, what are we doing after this? What are we doing after this television? I've got time, haven't I? And they went, yes. So he said, how much time have I got? And they said, oh, well, you know, he said, you can have as long as you want to me. So he went, bless him, did his TV interview, came into, I don't think that went too well, came in, I think you know the story of that, came into this studio here where you are, sat where you are sitting.
Oh, wow.
And did the interview with me. Now, bear in mind, I'm like beside myself with joy and fear. And also, I didn't think I was interviewing him. So I've not done any research.
Yeah.
I've not got notes. You know, I'm just like, right, okay. Good luck, Becky. See you on the other side. Anyway, he was great. He was patient. It was 2015, so it was the time of the book.
Yeah.
And of course, I hadn't read the book. It wasn't even out, but I knew enough about him, and he was lovely. I have, because I was talking to you, listen back to that interview, and I can hear, I'm so nervous.
Yeah.
I can hear, that. I can just hear it in me. But yeah, he was great, and he was a bit sort of slightly spiky, and we know he can be, of course, at the beginning, but he warmed up, and then I just talked to him about this album of his, you know, in collaboration with Burt Bacharach that I absolutely love. And it meant so much to me, Painted From Memory. And that was it. He was thrilled, and he was genuinely thrilled that I loved it so much. He really was, you know, for someone who's so huge and he's such a superstar. Because when I was listening back to it just then, and he said, because I just said, it's meant so much to me, those words of, you know, and that music has moved me so much. And he said, I am genuinely pleased to hear that. Thank you so much. And I'm like, oh. So that was the first time that I interviewed him. And just to go on to the second time, which was a few years later, when Look Now was out, and again he was going on to BBC Breakfast to be interviewed, and again we asked if we could have an interview with him, and again it was a no, like sort of the implication being like he doesn't do local radio, you know, he's too big. And this won't be from him, well, it might be for all I know from him, but anyway. And he walked past my desk and said, do you want to do another interview to me? Brilliant. And I'm like, well, my God, I'm like, you remembered me. Thank you so much. And yes. And so we did a second interview. And I've listened back to that as well. And I'm much more relaxed that time than I was the first time.
Oh, fantastic.
And actually, he was much more relaxed the second time. And this was after he'd had cancer. And he talked to me about it. And he talked about him... it giving him a sort of a new perspective. And I don't know, maybe he was in a better mood. Maybe he'd had a better interview on telly. Maybe he'd had a better night's sleep. I don't know. But he was warmer the second time, most definitely.
Yeah. Do you think it helped you, the fact that you weren't expecting to interview him, just to sort of tone down the nerves a little bit?
Yes, maybe, maybe. I have to say, though, I have told that story. I've dined out on that story that the PR said no and he said yes.
Yeah. Well, the second one, him coming to you and asking, do you want me to come on, is terrific, isn't
it? Yeah, really terrific, really.
Actually, this slightly makes this question a bit redundant because I was going to ask about your prep for those kind of interviews, but evidently you weren't really given much chance to do it. But there must be a slight sort of balancing act, because in your head as a massive fan, you must have really quite niche stuff you'd love to ask him about, some random B-side or something. But then you're conscious you've got a huge audience listening in who are, you know, not everyone is going to be that level of fan.
No, I'm always aware of that. And the big sort of, whenever you talk about Elvis Costello, one of the big things that people talk about is his dad and the secret lemonade drinker.
Yeah.
And I did ask him about that, it kind of apologetically, but knowing that, you know, you do have to ask the questions, and you've got to ask the questions about the big songs. So, I mean, I would have love nothing better than to have done an in-depth interview about, you know, his collaboration with Burt Bacharach, for example. And I did, in a slightly self, in fact, I say on the interview, and this is slightly self-indulgent, but I have to ask you about this album. And he was very honest about that album, and he said that didn't sell well, you know, it just didn't sell well. But he said six of those songs on that album are amongst the best that I've ever recorded. That's what he said to me.
Yeah. We'll talk about Painted From Memory in a bit more detail in a minute or two. But thank you for sharing all that. That's so interesting to hear that. And what a great experience you've had with those interviews. And, you know, hopefully he's back here very shortly.
So he is, yes.
Maybe he'll come walking past your desk again.
I know, but I'm not in at that time.
Oh, no.
So I finish at 1 o'clock in the morning now. So I'm just going to have to sit at that desk until 8 o'clock in the morning. And I would.
Yes. Okay. Let's take another song. We'll go to the song that you've chosen from the 1980s, and this is from the album Spike.
Is it all in that pretty little head of yours? What goes on in that place in the dark? Well, I used to know a girl, and I could have sworn that her name was Veronica. Well, she used to have a carefree mind.
So this is Veronica, a song co-written with Paul McCartney, released as a single and also part of the album Spike in 1989, a big hit in the US, reaching 19 on the US Billboard and a number 31 hit here in the UK. Why have you picked this one?
Well, number one, it's like, ooh, Elvis Costello and Paul McCartney. So that's something to wrap your head around, isn't it? You know, and if you read his book and you hear about the two of them, and he says in his memoir, Elvis Costello says in his memoir that, you know, word came to him that Paul McCartney, you know, wanted to work with him. And he said the person before that he'd worked with was Michael Jackson.
Yes.
So, you know, did he have to start learning to dance sort of thing? But one of the many things I love is that he's really open to collaborations, it seems, you know, and he's very supportive of other musicians.
Yes. Yeah.
And I really like that about him, because he could be seen as a man with a massive ego, let's say, but could be seen as, and yet he's happy to share and likes collaborating. So I love that to start with. And I am always interested, I mean, I think it's a gorgeous melody, but I'm always interested in his stories. And I understand this story. I can't say I understand every story.
No.
It's like, and he loves that, doesn't he? You know, he kind of likes to leave a question mark at the end. Does it mean this or does it mean that? He's so clever. I mean, he's so clever with his lyrics and his puns and, you know, twisting things. You know, he's a genius as far as I'm absolute genius as far as I'm concerned. But this one I understand, and I like sentimental Elvis. I like Elvis who remembers his grandparents or his grandmother in this case fondly, and who hopes, because this is all her. Veronica, I think, was his grandma's confirmation name.
That's right.
Yeah. So obviously a Catholic family, you choose a confirmation name. His grandma was called Molly, I think.
That's
wasn't
right.
She?
Yeah.
But her confirmation name was Veronica, and she had dementia. But in the song, he hopes that the contentment she felt from some of her memories, he hoped that the contentment was more than the distress that she felt when she couldn't grab onto those memories. And, you know, he says it's wishful thinking. It's a song about that. But it's beautiful. You know, it's just a beautiful song. And, you know, she closed her mind upon the world. I mean, I don't know where it comes from, but even when you talk to him, he talks beautifully. You know, every word is perfectly pitched, even in conversation. You know, clever man. Very, very, very clever man.
And this is very tender, isn't it? To see the situation his grandmother was in, but also see the beauty that is still there in someone's life, even if they're going through something awful. And as he told Melody Maker in 89, it's unashamedly pop music. If people had realised straight off that it was about an old woman, they might have thought it was too maudlin and just shut it off. Whereas the whole point of the song is that there is some hope and defiance in the character. It's said with love.
Yeah, no, absolutely. So he hoped that the memories from the past that actually calmed her gave her comfort. But, I mean, when you think about that song that he wrote about his father dying, and he writes in the book about the death of his father, but the song he wrote, The Puppet Has Cut Its Strings.
Yeah.
I mean,
it's a hard listen, isn't it?
Yeah.
Yeah.
I don't know how he managed to write it. I wonder how many times it took him to record that. I mean, wow.
Well, I think that was just the one vocal, because he did it at home on his laptop.
Oh, did he? You see, I knew you were going to teach me things. I didn't know, really.
Yeah, they then took it into the studio, and I think Elvis is intending to do the proper vocal in inverted commas, but Questlove and Steve Mandel, who's been on here, kind of said, no, that is the vocal. All of the emotion is there in the thing that you've recorded. And you'd wonder if you could ever do that again in a studio. There's something so private about what he's singing about, but maybe the only way you can do that is at home when nobody else is around.
I didn't know that.
Yeah.
Ah, that's amazing to know that. Yeah, that's, I love, you'll know so much, obviously so much more than me, and I love to have flesh on the bones. There's something about him and the songs he writes and him and his story, I just want to know more. I finished my show, because I knew I was doing this with you, I finished my show last Thursday night, a week ago, and I dug out my book, Unfaithful Music, Disappearing Ink, and I dug it out, and I started to just dip into it and read it last Thursday night, and I got, because I get home at 1:30 or something like that, and you knew what time I looked at the clock, and it was 4:30.
Oh, wow.
4:30, that's your fault. Because I'm just like, and then I went to bed and I couldn't sleep, because I was thinking about it and thinking about it all the, it's an incredible book.
Yeah,
really. I'm going to read it again.
Yeah, I mean, put an index in the back, please, Elvis, because when I'm trying to research for the show, it's like I'd love to just flick through, but I almost know by heart now, even through however many hundreds of pages, roughly where stuff is, if I know there's a quote in there or something that I just want to reference. But actually, I quite like the uncompromising fact. It's not in chronological order. No. You can't just dip in and find the thing that you're looking for. You, if you want it, you need to read the whole story.
But that's so him.
Exactly, yeah. Do you know, another thing that I find fascinating with Veronica is this is obviously one of the very first songs he and McCartney did together, and they each take along a half-written song for the other one to finish off, so they're not kind of staring at each other with nothing to go on. So Paul brings in Back on My Feet, Elvis brings in Veronica, and they finish it up together. But I think it's such a personal song to do as a collaboration with someone. And again, a bit like recording Puppet has Cut Its Strings, you would think that's something you would need to write on your own because it's so personal. But I think the fact that he trusted Paul to be the collaborator, and of course he's incredibly sympathetic as a collaborator, McCartney anyway, but to offer that up for a collaboration is a really interesting thing, actually, I think, to be the first thing they go at.
He's an interesting man, isn't he? You know, he's, by all accounts, he's spiky. Well, we know he is, you know. We've seen him be spiky. He's uncompromising. And yet, you know, he can be rebellious, he can be rude. And I'm talking not necessarily in songs, but certainly in songs. And then he can be so full of love and tenderness and joy, and I don't know, he's just so, there are so many facets to him. He's fascinating. He's a fascinating character. He really is. There is something about his voice that just reaches into my heart or my soul or something inside me and grabs me. It just, and I know his voice polarizes people, and I can see that, but they're like the lower register, he can kind of purr, and then it's like a kind of a sharp bark at the height of his register. And I like people who are great singers in that their phrasing is beautiful. His phrasing isn't beautiful at all. He takes breaths where you shouldn't take breaths. If you really listen, it's kind of, it's not beautifully moulded, but it just works. It really, really works for me. It's his voice to this day. His voice.
It's expressive, isn't it? It conveys the different emotions in the song.
Yeah, and it's so distinctive. And I just love it. I just love his voice.
This is Dangerous Amusements, a podcast with a suitcase of phony wisdom to dispense.
So we're moving into the 1990s for your third song choice, and from an album that you mentioned a few minutes ago means a huge amount to you. And this is a song we've not had on the podcast so far in the 4 years, and I'm delighted you've picked it because I love it. I was saying to you, it's my wife's favourite Elvis Costello song as well, so she'll be delighted to hear it. And this is a wonderful song, Toledo.
All through the night you telephoned, I saw the light blinking red beside the cradle. But you don't know how far I've come. Now I must live with the lie that I made. But if I call, I know I won't have to say it. You'll hear my voice. Something is bound to be.
Elvis Costello was really, really proud of his collaboration with Burt Bacharach because, and it was a proper collaboration in that they both, you know, wrote the music together and the lyrics. And it started a few years before with God Give Me Strength, and they went, oh, that we've got something together here, and they came up with this album. And he told me great stories. He had great affection for Burt Bacharach, and he said that Burt, he would phone him at midnight and say, come on, come on, have you got some more, have you got some more words for me? Come on, are you working? What are you doing? And he'd be like, you know, you're 90, Burt, you know, just go to bed. But apparently, and he said to me that they were rehearsing for a concert, and it was a two-hour concert, and Burt insisted on rehearsing for 3 hours on the same night as the gig. So he was an absolute perfectionist. But I don't know what it is about this. I was thinking 1998, I was incredibly happy. My dream had come true. I had a baby who was one, and it had been a real challenge for me to have a child. You know, it took years and years and years. So I was in my happiest place. This beautiful baby I had was one, you know, work was great, everything was fine. And I am just drawn to this melancholy. Mm-hmm. It just speaks to me. It speaks to something deep inside me. It is, if not my favourite album of all time, it's definitely in my top three.
Yeah.
And since I knew I was doing this with you, I've been listening to it on a loop. And I just adore it. I adore every single bit of this album. But I've chosen Toledo because, yes, it's about Toledo, the place in Ohio. It's about Toledo, the place in Spain. Or is it? It's probably about two small broken people, or lots of small broken people. It's probably about infidelity. It's probably about, I reckon, a man who sees himself as an all-conquering Spanish hero with masses of women, but in effect, he's just a sad little cheat who lives in Ohio. Mm. You know, is it? Mm. I mean, I think it probably is that, but who knows? But last September, this is the reason why I've chosen this particular track off the album that I love. Last September, me and my husband did like 2 weeks driving. We hired a car and drove around Spain, different places. And we went to Toledo. Of course we did. Yeah. And actually, my husband was ill on that particular day where we were there for a day. And so he stayed in the hotel. And I went off on my own all around this Spanish citadel, just singing this song over and over and over and over and over again in my head. And I've got some wonderful pictures, and it's an amazing place. And so I thought, well, I love all of the songs, but I'm going to choose this one to play. Mm. Elvis talked to me about this album, as I said earlier on. He said he wanted to call it In the Darkest Place, but they thought that that was a bit too grim.
Yeah.
So that didn't happen. And also, when I spoke to him in 2015, told him how much I loved it, he said, well, watch this space, because, you know, people are interested in it and we think it's going to be a stage show. And I think they got quite far down the line, because when he came in next, I said, what happened there? And he went, yeah, he said, well, you know, it was going to happen. We got quite far down the line. And then someone said, nah, it's too sad. There's no tap dancing. Where's the tap dancing? Yeah. No, we can't make it.
Right.
So
yeah.
Not everything happens, but it's really strange. Just after, literally sort of half an hour after Elvis Costello had left this studio, when I'd spoken to him about this album, quite a high profile actor came in to be interviewed by me. And I won't say who he is, because I said to him, oh, you never guess what, I've just interviewed my hero, Elvis Costello. And he went, painted from memory. That's what, I didn't mention anything. It's not his most well-known work in any way. It wasn't commercial success particularly. And he said to me, and I went, why are you saying that? He said, God Give Me Strength. He said, every song on that album I love. And the reason I'm not saying his name is because he was really suffering, and does suffer quite badly from mental health issues. Has very bad, very, very bad OCD, which he fights. And he says, this music, for some reason, really helps to centre him and calm him. And he made me promise that next time Elvis Costello comes in that he would be able to just kind of like, you know, touch his feet and genuflect in front of him because he absolutely loves him. But it was so weird. That was the same day, that like little known album. You know, if he'd said Oliver's Army, I'd have gone, But he knew the album I did, so.
I always think that must be satisfying for an artist because, you know, of course people are going to say, oh, I love Alison or Watching the Detectives or something. But, I mean, this isn't an obscure album by any stretch of the imagination. It was, you know, Grammy nominated. It's with Bacharach and all of that. But it's not one that the casual fan would necessarily go to. So that must be great if you're the artist and you've got someone picking, another record.
I mean, I do think that's why Elvis Costello warmed to me, because he did know that I knew that song. And I do think that the second time he came along, he remembered me because of that. Mm. Because I was, you know, I really am a fan.
Yeah.
I really do love him.
Yeah. And you didn't open the interview by asking why he was called Elvis, you know, which so many of those interviews begin that, don't they?
And I know.
And they set the mood for the rest of the conversation.
I know. It's like,
I'm with you on Painted From Memory. I never get round to fully ordering my favourite Elvis albums, but I think it's definitely minimum top five.
Oh, is it?
Definitely. Yeah, I love it. And I mean, I wasn't an obvious buyer of that record when that came out. I was 19. I was a student. And I actually bought it in Manchester as well, which is where I know we're technically Salford, are we, on this
we
side?
So
we won't say it's Manchester. But yeah, I bought it on Market Street in Manchester as a 19-year-old student. Probably not the demographic they were aiming for at all. I just loved it. I think it's such a classy record, isn't it? Nice quote from David Wilde in Rolling Stone. He described Painted From Memory as a stunning, vital song cycle, and he considered Toledo to be among the finest vocal performances of Costello's career, which is nice. I mean, you can find so much praise for it among, you know, the critics.
Yeah.
It's the kind of thing that I think, you know, critics would love. But like you, I'm always surprised it didn't do better commercially.
It is too melancholy, probably, isn't it, really? You know, it's like...
Only for annoyingly happy people.
Well, it doesn't have tap dancing. Do you know what I mean? There's no respite from it. But it's brilliant for that.
Yeah.
It is utterly, utterly brilliant. Mm. I love it. Absolutely love it.
These few lines I'll devote to a marvellous girl covered up in my coat. Pull it up to your chin. I'll hold you until the day will begin. Still lying in the shadows, this new flame will cast upon everything we carry from the past. You were made of every love and each regret up until the day we met there.
Your next song choice, we have to have one from the 2000s, another great decade of Elvis music here. And you've gone for this beautiful song, Still, from the album North in 2003.
Mm.
Really interesting choice. Interesting album. Not always a favourite with everybody who comes on here, but there are some wonderful songs on that record.
Yeah, I know. It's a strange album, that. I mean, somebody said it's like Elvis and Burt Bacharach without Burt Bacharach. And I understand that. And it takes quite a lot of listening to. I really like it. Mm. It's not my favourite Elvis Costello album. But again, he's telling such a story. I'm so fascinated by the way that he talks about his life through his songs. And, you know, he really is, you know, it's the breakdown of, was it a marriage or wasn't it a marriage? I mean, who knows if it was, but a long relationship. It's the breakdown of a long relationship. And it's the falling in love with Diana Krall, isn't it? And I don't know, I read somewhere, I don't know, you'll know better than me, that some journalist wrote, Is Elvis Costello really bad for Diana Krall, and is Diana Krall really bad for Elvis Costello? You know, right. Together, are they bad for each other's careers? Because if this is what happens when Elvis falls in love, then let's not have him in love. And I'm like... Mm.
It's snotty, isn't it?
Yeah. It's a beautiful song with beautiful words. I mean, there isn't much more I can say about it, but having listened to the whole album and that song now a lot, it grows on you and it talks to you, I think.
It's an album that people should spend more time with if they dismiss it offhand from the first couple of listens. There's, you know, there's beauty to be discovered in that record, isn't there?
Yeah.
And in fact, there's a lovely quote from Steve Naive talking about this one. Steve plays piano on it, and the Brodsky Quartet back Elvis as well. And Steve talks about a chord change in the middle of the song that is so delightful and so out of the ordinary. I think almost every song that he's written has this aspect to it. He's constantly trying to challenge his voice and put things into his songs that are challenging and interesting for him to sing. That kind of change is really emotional and amazing. You don't normally encounter that in a pop song. And we know that Steve is just this maestro.
I know. So who can do anything.
And for him to...
Any genre.
Yeah, and he must get a thrill from hearing what Elvis is bringing into the studio to do next. And he clearly does with Still.
I mean, it's such a romantic song. It's you know, a plea to keep the spark alive. I do wonder if he is able to talk the way that he is able to write, you know, because if he has had women falling at his feet, we know that, you know, he's told me about that, not necessarily in a good way. In fact, I regret so much of that, you know, he's gone on record saying that. But, you know, if he talks to women the way that he writes songs, then no wonder he's been so popular.
Well, let's move into the 2010s now. And, well, we had a couple of options here because I got a bit strict with the playlist, didn't I, at one point, because a song that you were going to choose has already been chosen. Mm. So I got a bit...
You said absolutely no.
I said absolutely no way. So you picked another one, and then on the way here, I thought, this is ridiculous. If you want to talk about another song, we should do that. But then I got here and you said, no, do you know what? I'm going to do the other one after all. So the
choice... You're such a tease.
I know.
So I just love, off Look Now, I love Suspect My Tears.
Yeah.
It's a beautiful, beautiful melody. However, I went with Underline, didn't I?
And the last time we saw him, he was out in the rain, watching that train roll down the train. Now he's back in showbiz, trying to make a comeback.
So we settle on Underline from the album Look Now in 2018, and yeah, this is an interesting song, isn't it? Revisiting an old character from a few years before and finding out what he's up to in his slightly older age.
So this is continuation of the song, Jimmy Standing in the Rain. And it's this seedy now old bloke, really, seedy old showman with a young assistant, a production assistant, let's say, with a clipboard. Trying to keep him off the booze, you know, trying to keep him off the sauce. So this is one of the stories that I do understand. The amount of times I've kind of gone and looked at lyrics and gone, what does that mean? you could have a university degree about Elvis Costello lyrics. You really, really could, because there's layers upon layers. But this one, you know, it's fairly obvious. And it's, oh God, it's a story as old as time, isn't it? Yeah. I'm sad to say. But it's about being up there and then coming down, and it's a long way down from the high horse you're on. Great line. And the horn arrangements on the... I love the whole album, actually. I love Look Now. I have listened to it a lot. I really like it. I was very happy to have him back after what had happened, although he was interesting about that. So, you know, he had cancer. when I interviewed him, we talked about it and he called it a lodger. He said, I looked on the cancer as a lodger. So it wasn't there forever. And, you know, he went, because he had to cancel concerts because of it, so he had to give an explanation. You know, normally he wouldn't have wanted to. He told me this. But he had to give an explanation for cancelling concerts. So he said that, you know, he had cancer. And the whole thrust of what he said was, get checked like I have and, you know, hopefully it will be fine. And certain elements of the press, tabloid press in the UK, just, you know, said, you know, pop stars, you know, deadly fight against cancer.
It was the one we don't talk about.
Yeah, well, he did. Yeah. I think we might have had to cut it out of the interview, but he was, you know, disappointed and angry about that. But anyway, the point is, it's like he was poorly and we thought, I read that and I thought, my God, you know, and he's fine. And he came back and he came back with Look Now. And I love it. I really, really, really like the whole album. But I've chosen Underline because I think I particularly like it. I like the harmonies on it, actually. It's a bit Beatles-esque, I think. And I like the horn arrangements. So yeah. I like it.
It's cool the way they use the horn arrangement to kind of imitate the theme music of the TV show, isn't it? It's a nice little touch.
Yeah.
Well, they won a Grammy for Look Now as well for Best Pop Vocal. So I think it's been recognised for being a really fine album. And that would have been, 2018, you had him on your show. And then you just touched on it a little bit before when we first started, not long after that. In the grand scheme of things, was that final gig before COVID. What are some of your other memories of seeing Elvis over the years? Any stand out from the concerts?
Well, I have to tell you the one I didn't like, and I can't quite remember when it was. I mean, it's probably 2017, but he was at the Bridgewater Hall. And, I mean, I did like it. I did enjoy it, but it was my least favourite, let's say that, because he, I don't know, he was just a bit arty and he was fine. I just don't think he was feeling it that night. And then people were shouting out from the balcony, in fact, where I was, they were very near me.
When you say some people, Becky... Was it you?
No, was it heck me? I wouldn't do that. No, they were shouting out for, you know, the big hits.
Yeah.
I think it was Oliver's Army that they were shouting for. I think that was it. And he told them to sod off, you know, they could enjoy it and sit and listen. And a few people left. So it wasn't that I didn't enjoy the concert, but I want everybody to see and appreciate the Elvis that I do. So I want him to be seen in the best possible light. And there were some grumpy people walking out of there. So I thought that was a shame because I wanted to say, no. Honestly, he's amazing. Yeah. You know, give him another chance. So, yeah, there was that. But the last one just before COVID at the Palace Theatre in Manchester was everything you could have wanted from him and more. It was hit after hit after hit. The staging was amazing, actually. He was full of energy. It felt like he knew it was... I think he said something, actually, on the stage. In fact, I'm sure he did, about it being touch and go. And I wasn't sure I was going to make this. We were going to have it, but here we are. And bang, honestly, it was like... It felt like hours. It was days before... You know, that was the end of it. So I just felt like we were very, very lucky to have him. And it was a brilliant night. It was a really, really great night.
You was the youngest of five and the only son. He called his wife by the nickname as his father had done. Not the root, not the branch, not the flower stand. He had the wildest of dreams, but he rarely remembered them. Turn the red rose, paint the red rose blue. What was he to do but turn the red rose?
So we come to your final song, this one from the 2020s. And this is a great song, one we've not had before as well. So it's always good to see a new one make an appearance on the playlist from the album The Boy Named Iv. Paint the Red Rose Blue, this is a cracker.
Yeah, so I was a bit aware that every song I chose could have been slow, actually. Could have been. So, and I know this is slow, but I think I've mixed it up enough for it not to be all slow. But
I like the way you're thinking in playlist terms here about sequencing and tempo.
Yeah, I really did, actually.
This is what we want, future guests. We want this level of thought going into your song choices.
No, it's just a radio thing, isn't it? You know, but I think I probably like slow Costello more than any other Costello. And anyway, so I thought we would end with this. So it's a beautiful melody. It's about, well, he said, actually, it's about somebody who's courted theatrical darkness only for its violence and cruelty to become all too real. So it's a couple. It's about the death of a relationship. It's told from a male perspective. It's interesting, Costello can tell stories from a male and a female perspective really very well. It's just achingly sad. And it's the red rose, the red of romance, turning blue. But I always, turning a very sad, you know, melancholy blue. But I hope, and this is always me, I hope that the couple are, you know, learning to love again. I hope that they're kind of, you know, going to go on the upward trajectory, but who knows? And wouldn't he love the fact that he's left a question mark at the end of that, and the person listening to the song is like writing their own ending and hoping for the best. So it's just simple and achingly sad. And The Boy Named If, the album, when that came out, and people were like, oh yeah, you know, here's Elvis as we knew him, he's back to the glory days. I mean, it was interesting, like, oh, welcome back, where have you been, man, and all that kind of stuff, which was a bit blokey. But I think he's been there all along, like really being brave, you know, different choices, different genres, always trying something new. But yeah, this Paint the Red Rose Blue is really, really beautiful.
Yeah. Peter Watson and Cut agrees. He called it a beautiful ballad that could easily have held its own on King of America. I mean, that's high praise.
Yeah, I know. It really, really is, isn't it? It's just, it's another example of like wistful irony and gentle pathos that he does so beautifully. Such an accomplished musician and such a clever man. Such a poet. He's unique, isn't he? I mean, you cannot compare him to anybody, I don't think.
No. I mean, just to expand on that for us as we draw to a close, I mean, how important has his music been to you since those early days of hearing him at university?
He's just the soundtrack, isn't he, to your, it's not formative years, you know, started really when I was 18, as I explained, to be in with the gang and to listen to what the lads were listening to, you listen to him. But very quickly it was like, and I think that those lads, not my husband because he's kept up with me, but those lads that I'm talking about that I was at university with, they won't have continued necessarily the love affair to the level that I have. I mean, they'll like the singles, I'm no doubt, but I wouldn't have thought that they will, you know, look at lyrics and try and work out what he means by them and, you know, followed his kind of career and been interested in what's happening to him. I doubt it. So he's always been there. But it is, I mean, he's often compared to Dylan, and I know that. But, you know, as far as a contemporary is concerned, he's a total one-off, isn't he? I mean, who else is there?
Thank you to Becky. You can find her on X as @BeckyWant and her show on BBC Sounds.
You can chat to me on social media at Dangerous Amuse on X and Dangerous Amusements on Instagram. My website is dangerousamusements.co.uk. The theme music for the podcast is performed by Gary Mulcahy.
That's all for this episode of Dangerous Amusements. Take my hand and let's go to Magic Lantern Land.